This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few.
Hello, and welcome to Tag Teams Back Again.
Whoop, there it is.
Yeah, we're back. We're back in the 80s. We're back with WWF. We are in a new year, in fact. 1988. Marty, you were still not alive at this point, correct?
I was not alive in 1988. This is no. True.
But one more year, is it? 89?
Yeah, you're about a year and a half.
All right. I was 10 years old at the beginning of 1988. I was feeling nostalgic for this time recently because in anticipation of doing this show, I always check out what was popular music-wise at the time because I often like to use a current song for the song that closes the show, and I started looking at the charts from around this time, and I think this was when I first started listening to pop music regularly, because every song for me just was like, oh yeah, I remember that. So yeah, this was me.
1988 was a pretty good year for music. 1987 was like one of the best years for like pop metal. But 88 was pretty solid. Poison came out with Open Up and Say Ah. I saw Bret Michaels last month playing all your Poison favorites.
Right. Yeah, it was just top 40. I was a total top 40 guy at this time. So, yeah. A lot of memories. And also a lot of memories of the wrestling from this time. So we're back with our original formula, let's call it, of WWF Tag Team Wrestling, and I think we picked out a decent sampling of matches to look at today.
That was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I had seen any of these matches before, actually.
I had only seen one.
Right. Yeah, there was one I had wanted to see for years, and finally got around to seeing it, and we're going to leave that one to last. And it's chronologically the last match we'll be looking at anyway. Before we get into this, Marty, anything you'd like to plug?
Anything I would like to plug? I found out recently in like the weirdest way that I'm no longer the Brainbuster champion.
Mm. Yes, I was going to bring that up if you didn't. How do you feel?
Yeah, I found out through a podcast. I felt like, you know, how Stone Cold found out he was going to be in a submission match with Bret Hart via the TV screen. I felt the same way, man. It's just like, whoa, jeez, nobody clued me into this one. Big old bunch of screw job on me.
Yeah, Johnny's going with a clean slate with season 2 of Brainbuster. That is going to be kicking off in a couple weeks, I think.
Yeah.
You know, no more defending champions, apparently.
Yeah, you know how I paid you guys back? I fell asleep in the middle of that podcast. Suck it.
Yes. You planned that one well in advance. Well, we'll see. I mean, the two of us are the only Brainbuster champions in history. So
that's true.
Basically,
yeah.
I think.
So what are they going to do? They're just going to not put us on the show, right? I guess.
Well, I've heard rumblings of a tournament of champions at some point. So I think
that's just me versus you.
Well, and the new champions that'll be crowned from season, as you see.
Right, I am forever the champion of season one, I guess, so it's not a total hose job.
Well, I don't know. I had 5 victories in season one, and I think you only had 3, so...
Yeah, but going back to the Billboard, if you look at the Billboard charts, isn't it the closing song is the number one song of the year? I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
No, I think it's the song that spent the most weeks at number one is the number one song.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the song that ended the year number one.
Anyway... We're the two champions. We shouldn't bicker. We can sit back and wait for other challengers to show themselves, and we will defeat them one by one until it comes down to the two of us for the final battle. We can call that right now. So anyway, anything else?
I don't know. You can catch me on Pro Wrestling Only. I'm Superstar Sleaze, SLEEZE. I was doing a lot of 1980s. All of a sudden, I'm on a Japanese 2010s kick. It's really jarring to go from Kensuke Sasaki matches where they hit each other really fucking hard to WWF tag team wrestling. But I really enjoyed, like, the first match I watched was Ricky Martel high step, and I was like, you know what? I can dig this. So it was actually not the – it was a little bit jarring at first,
right.
But, you know. I got back into it
pretty fast.
So, yeah, you can catch me there, and you can catch me on Twitter at Superstar Sleaze, same spelling.
Right.
And there you go.
Yeah, well, I was going to bring up PWO as well because this is our beloved board. This is where we met, Marty, and where I've met a lot of my other podcast buddies. And I nobody's really said it, you know, but I kind of got to say, PWO, what's up? It's been kind of a ghost town lately. It's getting, you know, it doesn't have much of a buzz going in. Come on, this
what
is the best.
What are you talking, man? Me and the Croatian dude are talking about Japanese wrestling a lot.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, sheltered away in like the 2010s folder.
The 2010s thing is the 2000s. We're talking about the Big Mouth Loud promotion together.
Right. It's just, after the greatest wrestler ever poll went down, you know, people have kind of drifted away, Parv, you know, and, you know, it just feels like the board needs a shot of energy and a bit of a wake-up call. So I'm putting it out.
I feel like you need to be that shot of energy.
Well, hey, I'm pumping out podcasts. I'm posting there.
That's true.
Where's everybody else?
Hey, I tried to get Dana Brooke on this podcast. I tried to take this podcast to Flex City. I was so bored during that SmackDown. I was just tweeting, trying to get.
Anyway, enough about that stuff. As for me, I've got like too many podcasts to name these days.
I actually have listened to all the At the Gardens. And they are awesome. So you should check out At the Garden by Kelly Nelson.
Thank you.
On the Place to Be Nation. And great history lesson. They're short and sweet, but you learn a lot. And it's not all, I mean, it's about Bruno at Madison Square Garden, but you learn about the TV structure, how that influenced things. You know, you have attendance figures. You have cool. I learned stuff about Captain Lou Albano and, you know, how important he was and, you know, being a shot in the arm to 1970 WWF and, you know, people like Crusher Verdue and stuff like that. I mean, it was really, it's a really great podcast, At the Garden by Kelly Nelson.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's a labor of love, as all my podcasts are. That one, it takes a long time to produce a single episode. But hey, yeah. And if you're a little burnt out on extra long epic podcasts, At the Garden clock in at around 30 to 45 minutes, so
yeah,
easily consumed maybe for a quick walk, you know, on your ride back from work or whatever. And it won't take a month for you to listen to the podcast.
Easy.
Yes, an easy listen. And I should also mention, for Titans of Wrestling, for the last few episodes, I've teamed up with my longtime friend Travis from back in my days in Calgary. We live together here in the same city in Greater Vancouver. And we are doing a look at Stampede Wrestling, the Stampede Wrestling territory. And yeah, it's on the Titans of Wrestling podcast, so check it out. It'll be an ongoing sort of thing, 6-7 episodes, who knows. We're sort of putting it together on the fly here. So that's what we're doing with Titans of Wrestling right now. All right, so let's get to tag teams back again. And we are starting the year January 9th in Boston, Marty.
Yeah, Titletown, USA, baby.
And we're starting it off with a new team to the territory, the new team on the scene. So last year, you may remember, in 1987, we had a tag team, a mass tag team called the Shadows, who were Randy Colley and Jose Luis Rivera. And basically what happened here at the end of 1987, around November 1987, the Shadows vanished mysteriously as they came upon the scene and were replaced by a new mass tag team in gold from head to toe, and with one of the same members from the Shadows, Jose Luis Rivera, and joined by longtime WWF jobber to the stars, Jose Estrada. And they are the Conquistadors.
And hailing from somewhere in Latin America.
Yes. That was an awesome call. Well, they're mysterious. We're not sure who they are. We're not sure where they're from. So I guess it's appropriate, you know, that they're somewhere down there, down in Latin America. But yes, they were. So they are legit Spanish, at least. I mean, you know, we've seen in wrestling that there's a lot of, you know, people claiming to be from one country that are obviously not from that country or whatever. But the Conquistadors were legitimate Latins. So they had that going for them. I always had a soft spot for the Conquistadors. You know, I love the mass teams or the mass guys. And yeah, this was when I was a big fan and watching every week. So definitely remember them. So I used my power to insert this match into the lineup tonight and force Marty to watch another questionable match. But I think this turned out to be better than you may expect on paper. They're going against the British Bulldogs, who have seen better days for sure. But also, I was surprised at particularly Dynamite Kid's performance. What did you think of this one, Marty?
This is the worst match we will see, but it wasn't that bad. Like, we've seen way worse. So yeah. I mean, that's the real thing. I thought this was like all the matches that we watched were actually, you know, pretty damn good. You know, this one was more like in the average type.
Oh yeah, way. Yeah. It's nothing.
Yeah,
special.
But like average is a lot better than, you know, mm-hmm. what I was expecting when it was the Bulldogs versus the Conquistadors. Mm-hmm. So this is right after the Islanders had kidnapped Matilda. And so Bobby the Brain's on commentary. So the Bulldogs chase him off. Excuse me. I thought the best part of the match was the babyface shine. Bulldog press slam, dynamite arm drag, snap suplex. I personally would have just liked to seen the Bulldogs squash the Conquistadors. But, you know, basically they just kind of just had a, you know, your formula tag team match. It was double face in peril.
Yeah.
Dave Boyd gets in the wrong corner. I don't know. It was kind of a blasé heat segment. One of the Conquistadors goes, woo! And then he misses an elbow. So mm-hmm. then tag out to Dynamite. And the other Conquistador, you know, Dynamite gets a sleeper hold. The interference, you know, the Conquistadors you can't tell them apart. They're both in gold and they're about the same height. So, right. Yeah, as you would expect, a lot of switcheroos. It's a longer heat segment, focusing mostly on the back. You know what was cool? I liked how like Dynamite kept pressing the Conquistador off, and that actually eventually led to the Conquistador falling outside the ring. So that was like a nice little bit of psychology. And then they, you know, the Conquistadors keep up the switching, of course. And then I guess Dynamite hits a headbutt. Davey Boy is a house of fire. You know, he's throwing the Conquistadors around. Delayed vertical suplex, nice pile driver by my main man, Davey Boy. I love Davey Boy. You said Dynamite. I was digging Davey Boy in this match, to be honest with you. Power slam, see you later. And then he throws Dynamite on top with a rocket launcher headbutt for the win. You know, I would have, to me, the best part of this was the Bulldogs offense. I could have just saw the Bulldogs squash these guys and just hit a bunch of offense. I mean, the heat segments were there. I don't know. They didn't really do much for me. It was an average, you know, match.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, though, for the house shows, they didn't do squash matches, really. It would have been, if this was just on Saturday TV, yeah, it would have been a squash. And the Conquistadors would, you know, be a part of quite a few squash matches on TV in 88 and into 89. But on the house shows, they usually would, you know, and this was the opener.
Too.
Yeah, this was the opener. It would, yeah, I'd drag it out a bit. Yeah, I thought this was a perfectly fine match, you know, nothing really bad about it. There was some parts, like with the Conquistadors doing the mass switch, where really it wasn't really at a point where they had to even resort to that. They could have just tagged out, but they were still just doing the mass switch.
Well, yeah. Because they're just, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it's a dick thing to do.
It's a dick thing to do, but it was, they were doing it at points where it didn't really warrant them having to, like, you know, go that extra step to do, like,
yeah, but
a
like,
non...
Gorilla pointed out that, you know, they're just outsmarting themselves.
Right, yeah. So I guess if there it was some sort of long-term
It was pretty forgettable.
Yeah, but they had just started doing this mass gimmick, so maybe they had to work it out a bit. No, I liked Davey Boy too, but my point about Dynamite was that we saw in 1987, you know, after the back injury, that he'd been quite limited, and it seemed here that he was, you know, a lot better than he had been. Because we saw a lot of matches in 87 where he hardly tagged in at all. And if he did, it was, yeah, a couple spots and then back out again. Here he was actually the face in peril for a good chunk of the match. So, yeah, that was not bad, but yeah, nothing too special, but it was better than I expected, even though, you know, I love the Conquistadors, but, I was glad it didn't turn out to be a dud, and the Bulldogs are still super over at this time. The crowd's really into them. It was a hot crowd in Boston. Actually, that's going to be a theme tonight, is that, pretty much all the matches we're going to look at took place before hot crowds. Now, from
Kelly Nelson's a mark for hot crowds.
Yeah, I love me a hot crowd. And I have to mention before we go forward that this card was uploaded to YouTube in full, and that's by Richard Landy, 1987, at PWO, who's a major uploader of these WWF house shows from the 80s. I've mentioned him on Mystery Titans Theater. Actually, he's more often than not, we use a card that he uploaded to YouTube for our Mystery Titans Theater shows. He's just a godsend. Like, he's basically doing, he's become like what the network could be if they just, you know, uploaded all their archives of house shows. Because lately, he's just been on fire uploading like four or five shows a day from all the cities, New York, Boston, Philly, even like NASA Coliseum, Detroit. Like, who's ever seen a WWF show from Detroit before? Like a house show card like that. The Puerto Rico show from the rain, or during the rainstorm that Johnny and I watched. Like, he's just been pumping out tons of cards. So I have to, you know, tip my hat again to him, because it's amazing. Thank you, Richard. So besides this match, we also looked at another match from this card. It's the last match of the night. And it's another Strikeforce vs. Hart Foundation match. We looked at a few of those at the end of 1987. And this one, I really, really liked quite a lot. And I shouldn't be surprised because Strikeforce are awesome. Heart Foundation, I've been defending them ever since we started doing this show, that they're really solid. And this was a really good match. What did you think, Marty?
Yeah, this was awesome. I actually watched the Bulldogs Conquistadors first, and I was kind of like, okay. But then, like, as soon, so Brett takes over on Ricky Martel, and then Martel does like some sort of flip over Brett, and then you just see how exuberant Ricky Martel is. He's got the high steps, and I'm like, this is it, baby. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah. I can get back into this. Correct. And it was great. Yeah, the babyface sign was like a ton of fun. Bret Hart was powdering. He was frustrated. He was discombobulated, flummoxed, and flabbergasted, baby. And they were, you know, just every turn Bret was being thwarted. And he finally gets a body slam off. So he wisely tags out. Anvil comes in. The Brain says none of these sissy holds are going to affect, you know, the Anvil. Crossbody gets two on the Anvil, and then the transition is not the sliding knee, but Brett actually brings down the top rope, and Martel goes flying out, and we got a really damn good heat segment on Martel, and Martel really sells really friggin' well, and Brett, you know, body slams him on the floor, stomped the gut, just Anvil choking him, you know, Martel's trying to fight back, but just he's just being overwhelmed by the both of them. And, you know, Tito's trying to help, but he's, you know, only exacerbating the problem as usual. The Heart Foundation gets the big whip into Martel. You know, Santana pulls him off the cover, but that only causes more problems. They really milk the Martel-Brett knocking heads. I really thought that was going to be it, but it wasn't. And then, you know, Anvil put Brett on top of Martel. He kicks out, and they did, like, a false tag spot. Like, they really, you know, built up the drama to the hot tag.
Yeah.
And so Brett goes in to do the Irish whip into Martel, ends up taking the Brett bump into the corner. Martel gets to Santana, but, like, even till the last moment, Brett's, like, crawling over, like, trying to grab the foot. And so, like, the whole time is just, it's, you know, just a lot of drama. Tito Santana's a great house of fire. Always, you know, throwing those big haymakers. We get the flying burrito and the figure four, but Anvil hits him with the megaphone, and it triggers the disqualification. You know, great WWF formula tag team match, like tons of drama, great selling from Martel. One of the better matches we've seen. Excuse me.
Yeah, I was pleased that, you know, this one turned out to be a really, really, really good match. Great match. Because yeah. I've never seen it talked about anywhere. This one definitely is one for the all-time highlight reel for tag teams back again, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, really fast-paced action. Everybody doing great work here. Martel's awesome as always. He took that wicked bump over the top rope and onto the matless Boston Garden floor.
Over the parquet floor.
Yeah, thud. Down there, and then we get a great Martel face in peril. The spot where Martel, or they were both out, and Anvil put Brett onto Martel was great because the crowd kind of bit that was going to be the finish, and it was a huge pop when Martel kicked out of that. You covered pretty much the rest of it. I love the finish because it leads to a grudge match in the future, because, you know, it ended with a DQ, the megaphone was used, so we have unfinished business. So it's always great when you have a match that was this good and, you know, well, they're not done. There's still more to come from these two teams, and we will look at it later in a very different environment than this match. But yeah, check this one out. Check out this card. It's on YouTube. It's the January 9th, 1988 Boston Garden show.
Yeah, you know what match this? What unique and rare match this hand has on it? Hogan versus Rick Rude.
Yes, right. Thanks for reminding me. Because once I started looking at this card, I was like, damn, this is a pretty interesting card from top to bottom. Because it also has another Jumping Bomb Angels Glamour Girls match that we didn't look at. I was almost thinking we should, just to be completists, because I think we've looked at you know.
That MSG Angels girls match was pretty good.
Yeah, that was really good. And we watched a few others between the teams.
Yeah, the TV matches were pretty good.
Yeah. What else is on this show? Oh, there's a Greg Valentine versus Brutus Beefcake grudge match. The Dream Team explodes.
Yes. I've seen their matches before. Valentine, he does a pretty good job with Beefcake.
Right. I know you're low on them. I've never... Well, I probably have seen a Valentine versus Beefcake match, you know, years ago, but I don't remember it. But yeah, I know
it's not Valentine at his best, but it's better than Valentine versus Morocco. That's the absolute worst thing I've ever seen from Valentine.
Yes, well,
John Morocco managed by superstar Billy Graham in like the middle of '88 versus Greg Valentine is brutal.
That it's yeah. Well, that's that I know. No, that's Morocco. I mean, and he's bad enough at times in the early 80s
as he is
now in the late 80s when he's just totally bloated steroid, just out of control steroid abuser. He can barely move. It's not good. All right, so from there we're gonna go to Hamilton, Ontario for the very first Royal Rumble. It was on the USA Network. This was a cheeky move by Vince to counter Jim Crockett Promotions doing the Bunkhouse Stampede pay-per-view from on the exact same day. And they held it in, I want to say it was in the NASA Coliseum, actually. One of their forays up north to try and, to try and have a presence up north, and it failed miserably. Bunkhouse Stampede's considered one of the worst of the early pay-per-views from Crockett. So what Vince did was put out... And the Bunkhouse Stampede was, of course, a battle royal in a cage, basically, if you've never seen it before. So this was Vince's idea to counter it, because he'd already countered Starrcade 87 with Survivor Series, doing that on the same day. And so this was his second attempt to sabotage a Crockett pay-per-view. And it worked this time too, because the ratings for Royal Rumble 88 on the USA Network were huge. It was basically based around Hogan and Andre having a contract signing for the main event rematch coming up. And the Royal Rumble on this show is only 20 men instead of 30. And it's not very good. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Marty.
I've not seen this Royal Rumble.
It's definitely in the bottom, 10 Royal Rumbles ever.
You know what? I like the Royal Rumble, like, in the moment. But I've never actually gone back. Besides 92, I've never gone back to watch a Rumble.
The early Rumbles are mostly good. Like 80...
I guess they're just kind of long is my issue.
Right, I mean, because they strictly go by, like, the two-minute intervals. Yeah. But the 88 Rumble, it's...
Not a good one, okay.
There's guys, confused as to when they're supposed to be coming out, so you have, like, two guys coming out at the same time and stuff like that. But anyway, so this was from Hamilton, Cops Coliseum. I don't know how to explain this, but in Hamilton they built this arena because they wanted to attract an NHL hockey team, and they never did. So it's kind of this sad thing that they had this NHL sized arena that could fit like 16,000-17,000 people, and it never was used for the NHL, unfortunately. But it was used for Royal Rumble, the first ever Royal Rumble, so it's got that going for it. And why are we talking about the first ever Royal Rumble? Well, because one of the undercard matches is the Jumping Bomb Angels against the Glamour Girls. Best 2 out of 3 falls for the Women's Tag Team Championship. So we've watched Angels versus Girls matches from 87. So I thought we had to look at this, the title match. Definitely had to give this one a look. I'd never seen it before. So I think I've only seen the Royal Rumble match from this card. I don't think I've seen anything else other than snippets of stuff. So, Marty, what did you think about this tag match?
You know, I'm as bad as Vince McMahon. I don't know their names.
Oh no, he did. He halfway through, he was able to.
He called his first shot at it was Marino.
Right, and then he was the pink one and the red one. But yeah, then someone must have passed him a note or something, because then halfway through, he suddenly has their names down.
Right, yeah, he was like Marino, and then he was like, oh, I think it's Nario. Oh man, it was pretty bad there, but yeah, by the end of it, I think he figured it out. But that was pretty funny. Actually, I thought the funniest exchange was, so Jesse says ain't, Vince
yes,
directs.
Yes.
Jesse says, well, you know, McMahon, it's Cable. He goes,
well, Vince says, it's have not. Yeah. No, that was great. I love that exchange.
Oh, you know, that was a great exchange. I don't know what you say back to Vince after that. Like, Vince actually got Jesse pretty good, because it was just like such a random thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this 1988, back when the women were the work rate division.
Yeah.
Man, this was like a bunch of, this was just fast paced, action packed. You know, right from the get go, they set the pace with the the quick drop kicks. What the hell happened on that pile driver attempt? Was she going for a power bomb and then the woman didn't get up for her, or what happened?
You'll have to refresh my memory on that.
I don't know. One of the angels like went for this thing, and then they ended up in a pile driver position, but she clearly wasn't ready to hit a pile driver, so she kind of just fell backwards. It was a really awkward spot.
Oh yeah, yes, and Vince called it a suplex. Yeah, they screwed that up. But I mean, as we've seen with the Jumping Bum Angels, they're not shy about botching moves. You know, they're great and fast paced, but as we've seen in all their matches, there's been a lot of timing issues and botches. So.
Yeah, as my mom always says, haste makes waste.
Yeah, there you go.
And so I like the double figure four spot. You know, they did a lot of work on Lilani Kai's, you know, legs with the bow and arrow stuff. Oh, you know what was a fun spot was when Judy Martin tries to drag Kai back to her corner, and then the angels yank Kai, and then Judy Martin does a face plant. I'm always a big fan of those type of things.
Right.
So anyways, yeah, so Kai ends up fighting off like a drop kick and like yanking the angel off the top, because I don't know any of the angels' names, so I'm just calling them angels. And I, unlike Vince, I didn't even try. So I'll give credit where credit's due. Vinnie Mac, you know, at least, you know, made an attempt here.
Yeah.
Tagged to Judy Martin, and she just did a monster reverse power bomb to win the first fall. Just like friggin' like destroyed that chick. It was awesome. Love the Glamour Girls. Second fall was pretty quick. Love the, me and Vince were marking out together during the sustained bridge out of the pin. You know, the Glamour Girls trying to punch her stomach, and the angel just is holding that bridge. It was sick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Glamour Girls. You know what? I actually had a harder time telling the Glamour Girls apart than I did the Angels.
Yeah, it can be tough. Yeah.
Yeah, because they both have their big ass blonde hair, and they mm-hmm. have like similar body shapes. Judy Martin is slightly larger, but mm-hmm. as Vince points out, so the angel, the hot tag to one of the angels, and she just starts hurling her body to get the cover at the on the Glamour Girl. You know, cross bodies, drop kicks. Glamour Girls run into each other. Kai gets her up for an Argentine backbreaker. They kind of fuck up this spot too, and you know, get the sunset flip for the fall. So it's all knotted up going into the third fall. Finally, it took us this long, but we finally get some kicks of fear. You know, when the Glamour Girls just start booting the chests of the Angels with those straight front kicks. It was awesome. Judy Martin is great. You know, she blocks a cradle suplex, gets a nice single leg pickup, and then turns that into a friggin' catapult. She's great. Mm-hmm. And then, so the heels just start using the hair, double teaming, choking, biting the hand. Like, it was just all out, you know, just heel brutality. Then the babyface transition was pretty funny. Lilani Kai just like starts throwing haymakers and is missing, and so the angel just drops her on her ass twice.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. And so then they have really good finish sequence, nice butterfly suplex with a bridge, and then the double drop kick from the top, huge pop for that. And then when they win it, an even bigger pop. I can't believe how much like the crowd was like pretty into it, semi into it, but like they were really into those that finish.
Right. Well, it was a title change too. Those were rare, even though it was the the meaningless women's tag team belts, but still, in those days, a title change was super rare. So that's part of the reason for the big pop, I think. Yeah, this was decent. The finish was pretty cool. I love the replay on the double drop kick, the slow mo replay where you just saw they, you know, both did hit Martin, you know, one after the next, like in a pinball sort of thing. That looked really cool. But she did, the angel. And I'm worse than Vince, you know. For some reason, their names are unusually difficult to pronounce. You know, we're wrestling, we're hardcore wrestling fans. We can talk about Tatsumi Fujinami and Jumbo Tsuruta and Kenta Kobashi and, or is it Kenta?
We know who Kenta Kobashi is. I'm like Sports Friggin' Illustrated.
Yes, we know the difference between Kenta and Kenta Kobashi. Unlike some hack from SI. Anyway, where was I? But yes, the angels' names for some reason are unusually difficult for us Westerners to pronounce.
Not only that, they're like kind of forgettable names for some reason.
Yeah, they just don't stick at all. Their last names are Yamazaki and Tateno. Is that how you say it?
I don't know. Yamazaki is like there's a male wrestler named Yamazaki. I know that name, but it's just like I do not remember that. That's her name. That's
yeah. Her. But anyway, the angel that got the pin on Martin clearly like pulled her shoulder up, and Jesse pointed this out, that when the three count was made, that Martin's shoulder actually wasn't down, but oh well. And they showed this on the replay, too. She was just a little too over-enthusiastic with the roll-up sort of part of the pin. Jack.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't really notice.
You didn't notice that? Yeah, because you couldn't notice it on during real time, but the replay clearly showed.
I didn't watch the replay because I was kind of in a rush to watch everything. I was like, all right, match is over, keep going.
So, miscarriage of justice. The girls got robbed.
Well, Jimmy Hart's a great manager. I'm sure he got him a rematch.
He's slowly losing his champions. He at one point Jimmy had the IC champion, the male tag team champions, and the female tag team champions, and now he is down to just the Honky Tonk Man with the IC belt.
You know what? I gotta give Jimmy Hart some credit. When Lonnie Kai tagged out with a bad leg, he was there massaging it, telling her to get some circulation pumping into it. So, you know what? Kudos to the Mouth of the South there.
Right. So, this was a good match. I'm tempted to watch their other matches, maybe just for my own pleasure, because there's the one, like I mentioned, from the Boston show we just discussed. And then there's another one. I think it's on the Boston show that we're going to look at later with the cage match. So just I'm almost to the point where I want to be a completist with Jumping Bomb Angels versus Glamour Girls matches.
All right, you can be the authority figure.
There's some Spectrum matches of theirs kicking around too. I think that we haven't looked at. So
I'm sure those are brutally violent.
Those are the ones that get bloody and crazy.
Yeah.
So this was a fun match, and it was cool to see the title switch. These two teams, though, man, they faced each other more times than friggin' Bobo Brazil. I was going to say Bobo Brazil and the Sheik during their decades-long feud, one year. Because if you look at the results, there was literally no other tag teams in the women's.
Oh, did you expect Rock and Robin to pick up the slack here?
I think maybe Rock and Robin did a few tag team matches.
Was she the really bad one we watched, or was that Velvet Mac? Which one was really shitty?
It could have been Rock and Robin, yeah.
I think it was Rock and Robin was pretty bad.
She wasn't particularly good, that's for sure.
I couldn't remember if it was her or Velvet McIntyre. One of those two was brutally bad.
But the Angels and the girls have faced each other like night after night for almost a year straight. By the time it comes to an end, I think.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show, right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indy Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tib Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
So next up, we are going to the City of Brotherly Love. And this is a really interesting show historically. It happened on February 6th. So those of you with knowledge of WWF wrestling history know that February 5th was a very important date, because that was when Andre the Giant defeated Hulk Hogan on the main event on NBC, the most watched wrestling show in history, and a record that'll likely never be broken, because it was on cable, it was on network TV, it was on NBC. This is the day after. And so, of course, the big... well, we'll get to that later when we discuss that match. But this show happened also on the same day as a show in Boston. So, and that became a pretty regular occurrence. We had that happen a few episodes ago. We were talking about, didn't we watch? No, you watched a match from Boston. I watched a match from Philly that happened on the same day with the same teams.
Oh, shit. I wonder if we did it again.
Well, we'll see. No, well, you should have watched the Philly match. But if you didn't...
Because I just followed your playlist.
Yeah, because I had it on the playlist. But they did a show in Boston on the same day with the exact same lineup, pretty much. And there was matches out there of both. But I decided that since we looked at Boston matches already, and we're going to look at one more Boston match later, that for the February 6th shows... we'll look at the Philly matches that happened.
Oh, but we could have had like a Beantown only show.
We could have, or almost an almost Beantown only show. But gotta throw some love to Philly. So this is February 6th, and the first match from this show we're gonna look at is the Bulldogs, British Bulldogs again, and they're going against the Islanders. So this was a... this was a feud that came up at the end of 1987, basically after the Islanders were done with Strikeforce. And the premise of the feud was that the Islanders kidnapped the Bulldogs' mascot, Matilda, and who knows what they did with her. And then they would taunt the Bulldogs by having the leash. And then eventually they would have it so that they had like a leash where it looked like there was a, it was like an invisible dog. So it, they were like leading around like this leash that, that they were acting like, oh yeah, the dog's still there. So that was what this feud was based on, folks. This was the peak of the animals in WWF era, where you actually had feuds based on, the animals. So here we go. You know, we loved the Islanders from last year. They had a great run, great feud with Strikeforce. Marty, what do you think, or what did you think of their work here against the Bulldogs?
I love that leash gimmick, the invisible thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Japanese wrestler, Milano Collection AT, who like has a similar gimmick because he's like an Italian fashion model, even though he's a Japanese dude. And so he's got like the leash with the invisible dog. So I'm a big fan of the gimmick. I enjoy it. I enjoy it as like a way to taunt the Bulldogs because it's kind of it's a ridiculous feud. And, you know, if you're going to have a ridiculous feud, you got to be ridiculous about it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I enjoy it. So you know what? I've never seen this match before, but I've seen other Bulldogs versus Islanders matches. And my personal recollection is they weren't very good. But this one was way better than the ones I remember. Tama was really good in this match. This was the thing that was like, going into this, I hadn't watched WWF in a while. I was like, you know, I was kind of out of that. You know, that wasn't my groove right now. But Ricky Martel and Tama brought me right back into it. Like, just all-star performances from both of them. Dick Graham says that the Bulldogs aren't big men. You know, it's kind of mean. Like, David Boy's pretty big dude. Like, you know, Lord Alfred Hayes calls him out on it. He's like, you know, height-wise, it's like, wow. You know, what would he think of the midgets that are running around now that are calling themselves professional wrestlers?
Oh, yeah.
Dick Graham.
It's ridiculous.
Dick Graham would not be happy.
Dick Graham was still tripping on some of that sweet acid from the 70s at this point.
Probably. Dick Graham would be a huge Roman Reigns fan.
Yeah.
You know, this is actually a really funny story. So I went to Extreme Rules in New Jersey, right? You know, Roman Reigns versus AJ Styles tore down the house. And awesome match. And we're coming out of the thing, and I've never been to Newark. We're going to walk from the arena to the hotel we're staying at. It's like a 5 to 10 minute walk, and Newark's a pretty nice town. But, you know, at some point you're going to leave the crowd and you're going to just be by yourself. And I was kind of like, okay, you know, I got my little brother with me. I got to be aware of my surroundings. But there was this really drunk wrestling fan who was pissed at all these smart marks that like these work rate guys. He was like, I'm sick and tired of these vanilla midgets. Roman Reigns is the fucking best. He should Superman punch them all out of the WWE. Me and my brother were roaring laughing. And I was just like, he should book the WWE. I love this man. But yeah. So anyways, Dick Graham and that dude. That's, you know, they would be in cahoots together. So, anyways, to start off, as expected, Babyface Shine. You know, that's what's great about 1980s wrestling. I can say that sentence, as expected, a Babyface Shine. That's the biggest problem with today's wrestling. Where's the Babyface Shine at? Mm-hmm. Haku crashes and burns on a cross body. Tama's out there. He's, you know, riled up. He's like, get those fools back. You know, let's get a clean start here. Tama comes in, and it's just like the Tama bumping performance of a lifetime. Like the atomic drop, you know, the big backdrop thingy, mm-hmm. catapults, press slam into the top, you know, press slam onto the top row. I mean, Tama was on fire just flying around for the Bulldogs. Really great stuff. Tries raking Davey Boy's eyes, but, you know, that doesn't really work. Davey Boy tags out, so he rakes Dynamite's eyes, and Tama gets a chance to tank out and to tag out. Dynamite comes charging in. Haku hits the double chop to the throat, where we are officially in heat. I don't know, man. Dynamite just doesn't resonate with me as a person when he's selling. So
right. I agree.
The heat segment just dragged again. So, like, the Babyface Shine was sweet. And the heat segment just wasn't doing anything for me. And then before you know it, we got David Boy back in. Well, not before you know it. It dragged, so it's not before you know it. But so double noggin knocker, delayed vertical by David Boy. You know, I love a good David Boy hot tag. Goes for the running power slam, hits it. Tama breaks. Like, I like this, like, the finisher thing with the breakups that was good. So, you know, you get the running power slam, and then you get the Tama Superfly splash. But Dynamite saves. Dynamite is just pissed. At this point, like, all the emotions he has for Matilda are finally coming out. And he just starts beating the shit out of the Islanders. He gets the leash. He whips him with the leash. And he's going to friggin' hang Tama over Matilda. You do not stale a man's dog.
No.
And awesome finish, great beginning, middle drag. So, you know, kind of just disappointing in the middle, but, you know, overall pretty good.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting too much from this either, because I remembered you saying you weren't a big fan of this feud, so I wasn't expecting a ton from it. But, this was a good match. The Philly fans were in prime form this evening. I just couldn't take my eyes off certain ones in the crowd that were just totally obviously hammered and taunting the Islanders mercilessly throughout. And it was classic Philly here tonight, folks. Great stuff. And yeah, I loved Haku taunting Dynamite with Matilda's leash. That was great. And that the leash actually got brought into the match. You know, a good blow off to this feud would have been like a dog collar match, you know, a double collar match. And of course they never went that way.
If only Paul Heyman. I forgot about Piper Valentine. Yeah. You don't really see a lot of dog collar matches after Piper Valentine.
Well, and in the WWF, that was a member. That's of course at Starrcade 83. That was Crockett. The WWF never did a dog. They did strap matches quite often.
They did the strap matches with, earlier. They didn't have strap matches in this era, did they? This era was pretty much just the cage match, right?
That's true. Lumberjack, cage and Lumberjack.
Oh, Lumberjack. Yeah, that's true. Lumberjack.
Those were your kind of two go-to gimmick matches from this era. It just came to me now that the dog collar match would have been.
If only you were booked in 1988, Kelly.
The logical finish for this feud. And especially because they introduced it in this match, and things got, you know, kind of wild at the end here.
A little chippy.
Yeah, it's set like just like with Strikeforce and Heart Foundation, it set you up wanting more, wanting to see a match with Stips, a match with, you know, the stakes raised.
You know what you want to see? You want to see a match with CV Afi.
Yes, or
do
you want to see the Bulldogs teaming with Coco Beware against the Islanders and Bobby Heenan?
That's true. It does make you want to see more Coco Beware for some reason.
Because that's what we're going to get.
See the bird and the bulldog and
That's
anybody come
natural in. Pairing. Yeah, they should have had Jake the Snake in there too, and you'd have all the animal gimmick on team.
What's that word? Menagerie.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? Friggin' TNA had a stable named that. Oh, that's too
really?
Bad. But anyway.
Well, yeah.
Sweet stable name for those guys.
Anyway, that's what we're going to get at WrestleMania 4 is a six-man, which I think we have to look at. It's been years since I've seen
it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And last time we looked at the WrestleMania 3 tag matches, so we'll need to look at the WrestleMania 4 tag matches. And I'm interested.
And you got a weasel in that match.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've become such a huge fan of Bobby Heenan as a wrestler in recent years that I'd like to see just how that went. This match was, this was good. There's the match between the two of them in Boston on the same day. I don't know how many other straight up. I think there maybe is a Madison Square Garden match between the two teams? No?
I think there's actually more than you're thinking. I can double check.
I'm not sure. I was kind of asking you, like, what else do
you were asking me? I kind of feel like I saw two straight-up matches from them that were not these matches. just about. I could be wrong.
Okay. There's an MSG one out there.
I'm pretty sure. I usually, when in doubt, stuck with the MSG matches. Because if you watch the Boston Philly match, especially if they happen on the same day, you're just watching the same match over again.
Basically, yeah. And that's the one building we've avoided for this show, funny enough, is MSG. We didn't look at any MSG matches. So
I am wrong. I only watched one. It was the January 1988.
Okay.
So I've only seen the January 1988 MSG match. There might have been more, but actually I'd only watched that one. I thought I'd watch more.
Anyway, next up is a major, major wrestling match, folks. This is something that not a lot of people have seen. February 6th, so the day after Hogan's 4-year reign with the title ended, with, of course, two referees, DiBiase. The original story was that he paid a man to get plastic surgery to look like Dave Hebner. And, of course, the person they brought in was Earl Hebner, his real brother. And then years later, it morphed into that there were actually two separate people. So this match is Hulk Hogan and Bam Bam Bigelow against Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase, the Mega Bucks, although they weren't, I don't believe they were going by that name yet. But this is significant because DiBiase comes to the ring with the WWF title around his waist and is introduced as the WWF champion, which, as we know, doesn't last very long because they strip him of the belt and hold a tournament at WrestleMania 4 for the vacant title. So this was rare. I think there was only a few shows that he did where he was actually billed as the WWF champion and had the belt. Parv must be a match that he, you know, when he feels really down and needs something to pick him up, he'll pop this match in, or the match from the same day in Boston, and see Ted, his beloved Ted, come down to the ring with the WWF title around his waist, and this will put a smile on his face. We do know Parv has lost his wrestling smile, and he needs it back.
He has lost. Is this official?
It's official.
He lost his wrestling smile.
He's lost his wrestling smile. Stephen Graham has lost his wrestling smile. Like I said at the top of the show, that greatest wrestler ever tournament fucking scorched the earth.
Oh my god.
A lot of people.
Parv didn't even do the job on the way out, just like Sean.
It's true. That's true.
Didn't even do the job on the way out. Jeez.
No. Anyway, so this is a cool match. And this match, well, we have Hogan in it, and we love Hulk Hogan. And
we love that stuff.
And the crowd is just fucking hot as fuck for this match. Artie, what did you think of this match?
It's just weird thinking of Bam Bam Bigelow in this time period. Like, he's such a mid-90s human being.
Right.
And, WWF mid-90s, like ECW. And then here he is with Hulk Hogan, probably at the peak of his popularity ever. And it's just like, I don't know, it's just really weird. Like, you know, I knew that Bam Bam was around, and I knew that, you know, he was pushed and then he kind of left.
Yeah. But he was pushed heavy. Like,
he was. And it's pretty crazy, you know, that he is peak Bam Bam popularity if you think about it, really.
At the time, I thought, you know, being a 10-year-old, I thought he was going to be the heir to Hogan or something. Like, that was how he was positioned. Was that he's even bigger than Macho Man, in a sense, I would say.
Huh. Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Huh. All right. And what the fuck is a Humperdinck? Is he like a ginger pimp daddy? Like, what the f... Like, I've seen the man before. I've never actually seen or heard him talk or anything. But, what the fuck is he out there for? What's he doing?
I don't know. It just... Babyface managers usually don't work to begin with, and yeah. The whole gimmick when Bigelow came into the WWF was that he was a free agent and all the heel managers wanted him.
And, yeah, it was the Savage gimmick, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Savage gimmick, where it was, I think it was called the Battle for Bam Bam. And each week, a different manager got eliminated from the running, basically. And then it came down to, I think, Slick was, I believe, the final manager left. And it turned out, just like with Macho, it was like, nope, I'm going to bring in my own manager, someone who hasn't been here before, and it was Oliver Humperdinck. So basically, Humperdinck is a male, ugly version of Miss Elizabeth.
He is definitely an interesting looking dude.
Just imagine him ripping off his pants to distract Andre and DiBiase.
How about taking off that shirt and revealing that hairy chest, I would imagine?
Either or.
All that ginger.
Yeah, ginger chest.
All that ginger just going on there. just a one big ginger snap. snapping to Humperdinck. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
all right, yeah, so... DiBiase had the Million Dollar Man had to wrestle for two here, just like Andre's like immobile. So
eventually,
it was a good.
Andre had to wrestle three times in 2 days at this point.
Holy shit! Well, yeah. All right, I'm gonna cut Andre some slack here, but
considering DiBiase's schedule at the time, that was hardcore for him.
That was definitely a lot of standing for Andre. There was that moment where he was like the creature from the Black Lagoon and he like crawls into the ring to attack Hogan was pretty friggin' awesome. Then Hogan just starts hitting with the punches. This is just one of those electric Hogan, like, cannot be stopped type thing. You know, eye rakes, back scratches, punches, just kicking general ass. Why not? I mean, he's pissed. He just got screwed out of the title.
Mm-hmm.
And they even do the can-can big boot. They both lift their legs up, so that's pretty cool.
Awesome.
And Hogan's great, man. He's not stingy with the love. He gets ready to tag in Bigelow, he makes a show out of it, like it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually Hogan ends up in the wrong part of town. Andre and DiBiase take the Mega Bucks take over on him. And DiBiase is a big fan of fist drops. I've watched a lot of Mid-South DiBiase, and he's pretty good. But WWF DiBiase, really liked his fist drops.
Yes.
And, hits the chin lock pretty hard here. And then we get the Hogan comeback, tagging to Bigelow. He does a little bit of stuff, but actually ends up taking, a quick heat. I thought they were going to do the DiBiase bump that he usually does, but they ended up just doing the press slam, and then you get the money. The money's in the Hogan hot tag, and Hogan was awesome. He drops the leg, wins the match. Crowd goes wild. There's 5 minutes of posing. It was awesome.
Yeah,
I love Hogan.
Yeah, I do too. These matches, because there's a bunch of them with these four. From around this time, and I'd never seen any of them before, but I knew they existed, and I was always kind of curious, what the quality was of them, and I was, I was pleased by how good this was. I mean, it's the crowd makes it. It's just nonstop, nobody sits down the whole time, just nonstop heat from the crowd. Coming off, I imagine... a lot of the people in attendance would have seen the main event show the night before. So this was, that angle had just happened. One of the biggest angles in WWF history had happened the night before. And this is your immediate response to that in Philadelphia. Red hot mega heat here. And yeah, this was great. Great Hogan performance. He could do whatever. He was so over. He could do whatever he wanted. And, so many wrestlers remark how easy it was to work with Hogan because he didn't have to do anything to get heat or, it wasn't even working, like they say. It was just go out there and, just let the Hogan show take over. And that's what happens here. Huge pop for the pin on DiBiase, gigantic pop. And then we get the full pose down routine afterwards, which I hadn't watched in a while. And yeah, this whole thing just, you know, it's the kind of wrestling that just puts a smile on my face. And, you know, it's pure. It's not cynical. It's just pure joy. Wrestling as well.
It is. Parv needs to watch this match. Parv,
yeah.
Watch.
Yeah. Smile. Yeah. Get your smile back, mate. So yeah, great. And like I said, with the Jumping Bomb Angels, Glamour Girls tags, I may have to check out the other Hogan Bigelow versus Andre DiBiase matches just for my own satisfaction and see how they compare to this one. So now we are on to our final match of the evening. Back to Boston, March the 5th. For this card, this is a six-man affair inside a steel cage. On one side, we have WWF Tag Team Champions, Strikeforce, teamed with Randy, Macho Man Savage, against the Hart Foundation and WWF Intercontinental Champion, the Honky Tonk Man. So a lot of gold in this match. This was a match I'd been aware of for years. I remember seeing pictures of it in a wrestling magazine. And it was something that wasn't on, or at least not that I can recall, any of the tapes or, you know, back in the 80s, unless you were lived in the Boston area and had the New England Sports Network, you weren't going to see this match. So it was kind of a holy grail, this match, in a way. I have to say, well, this match is hamstrung by the rules, so I'll just say that right off the bat. Marty, what did you think of this match?
You know, it's weird seeing Santana and Savage on the same team.
That's
a strange thing. You know, match starts off pretty damn hot. Everybody's using Strikeforce's T-shirts to choke each other out, and Anvil looks to escape through the door, but Tito punches him in the face a couple times. You know, that's general Tito. That's Tito's response to most things. And he actually ends up leaping over him, which actually would be a decent finish to a cage match, but it was... Oh, do we explain the rules that all three men had to leave?
Right. So, yeah, the rules for this are, instead of the first man to leave the cage from one team winning the match, it's basically the first team to have all three members leave the cage wins the match. So yeah, I'll get to it when I give my rundown in this
match. Okay. So I mean, Lord Alfred Hayes astutely points out that this can, you know, actually be a disadvantage to your team, because
right,
now you're leaving them 3-on-2. But in this case, where Tito jumped out, Anvil decides, hey, let me just waltz out.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was we'll, good. Yeah.
You know, well, let's leave it 2-2. So, probably the best spot in the match was Martel throwing Hitman hard into the cage. It was, you know, pretty vicious bump by Brett. Really threw himself in there. So the babyfaces end up whipping the heels into each other. This would actually be a perfect opportunity for, you know, Savage and Martel to escape together. But the Macho Man is just a little too slow and is caught, and Martel escapes. So this leaves Savage, the biggest babyface star, against the two heels, which I actually thought was pretty good psychology. You know, you have an opportunity for both babyfaces to leave. One babyface is slower than the other. Now we got the 2-on-1 advantage here. And Bret the Hitman Hart exclaims, "Piece of cake." Lord Alfred Hayes thinks he says, "Watch the gate." Which I thought was pretty funny. And so Hart ends up leaving, and now we got Honky Tonk, you know, the arch nemesis of the Macho Man, going 1-on-1 here. Honky Tonk gets a little cool, cocky, and bad, and, you know, try to milk it for a little bit more than he should. Honky tries to go over the cage. Savage pulls him back in. They do this spot that, like, I think sounded good in their head. You know, the spot usually is like the guy lays on the top rope with his gut facing down. You kick him,
mm-hmm,
and then like he pops up, and it's really funny. But like here they do it with Hockey Talk Man on the top of the cage, and Savage kind of tries to kick him, but it just doesn't work. It's, I don't know. But anyways, Hockey Talk ends up, you know, landing on his balls on the top rope, which is always fun. So that was great. And then Savage wins the match. Yeah, it's one of those things where on paper it sounds super badass.
Yeah.
But it just did not come out super badass.
No, not at all. Like, first off, there it goes maybe 10 minutes total. So it's
right.
Pretty rushed. Yeah, you had the heart or the Strikeforce and the Hearts have that heated match. A couple Garden shows previous. And so you had that coming in. Savage and Honky Tonk was a feud that was pretty hot at the time. Yeah, it just the race to leave the cage. And I'm usually one that doesn't really have that big of a problem with the escape the cage rules of the WWF. A lot of people, you know, just hate them. It's what I grew up on. It was the first cage match, you know, layout that I knew. This was, so maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. You kind of got to suspend your disbelief or whatever. But this just hit you over the head with how stupid those rules are. You know, basically, because, yeah, once one person leaves, then actually you're leaving your team at a disadvantage in the cage, which you would think would lead with, you know, end up having the other team take advantage of that and then basically pummel the you know, if it was a 3-on-2 situation, pummel, or a 2-on-1 situation, which we get here, pummel the remaining members and then just all walk out of the cage, right? Because you have the advantage. Yeah, there had to be some better way to do this. Maybe even have, you know, a ref in there and do pinfalls or something. It just didn't work for me, you know, and I love all the participants in this match. But yeah, and like I said, it was too short to really get much going. Everything happened so quickly. Like, I think Tito and Anvil were gone within the first 2-3 minutes of the match.
Oh, yeah, it was real quick.
Yeah, it was all really quick. For me, the highlight of the match was Honky taking, like, an all-time great crotch on the top rope.
Yeah, that was a great crotch.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Shot. It was an amazing crotch. But yeah, kind of disappointing because, like I said, this was a match I kind of looked at as like a holy grail for years, and then finally getting to see it, it was kind of a letdown.
You shouldn't meet heroes, Kelly.
Yeah, I set the bar too high, or my standards or whatever too high for this match, and then could only lead to disappointment. But I think...
No, see, don't blame yourself, Kelly. Blame the 6 participants involved. It's not your fault. Their fault.
I'm going to blame the booker, whoever, or the agent, or whatever, whoever.
Fuck Pat Patterson.
Whoever laid this one out. Pat Patterson, you think you're so fucking great with your great psychology and Royal Rumble and all that. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
I don't think it was Pat. That's the thing. He wasn't around. This was a house show in Boston. Pat wasn't there. And whoever was doing...
Well, I mean, Savage just does his matches. He lays his matches out. It was Savage who did it, I imagine, right?
Oh, well, that's the thing. I think the whole Savage had every one of his matches scripted is exaggerated, because I don't think he scripted every single friggin' house show match he had.
That's the point. But, like, I mean... Yeah, I don't know, like, too much about the whole agents and book and, like, who played out what, but I just figured the 6 of them got together. Between Brett and Savage, you have 2 people who...
Well, for the layout, yeah, but whoever came up with the rules. I don't think it was the wrestlers that came up with the...
Oh, I see, the rules part. Yeah, I guess you got a point. Probably Chief J. Strongbow.
Yes, that's who we'll blame it on, that damn Strongbow.
I don't know, you know, is Strongbow is so over in Boston to this day.
Oh yeah, no.
I caught up in a radio show recently, and really? Every time my uncle sees me, it's like, yeah, it's just like, you know, Chief J. Strongbow references, and I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, well, no. When Billy Graham was WWF champion in '77, I believe Boston was the only city where he headlined against Strongbow. I think so. Yeah, no, he was huge in Boston. But anyway, someone has to fucking fall on their sword for this atrocity of booking. I'm gonna blame Strongbow as taking a licking mostly from Parv over the years on Titans of Wrestling. Yeah, maybe I should watch this again or something. I
wouldn't recommend it. It was very, you know, it's very just there.
Yeah, it's just so much more. And I'm another. That's another thing. I'm usually not someone to say, "Oh, there's so much more could have been done," but this is just something that, you know, something so much more could have been done with this. This is like almost like a equivalent of a War Games type setup for WWF with the cage and multiple guys on each side, sort of thing. And it's just a very poor excuse for a heated grudge match, cage match. That's, you know. Anyway, I've said enough. Unfortunately, yeah, this match was disappointing. So we are at the end here. We saw mostly good stuff. We saw some really fun matches. We saw one match I would consider great, or at least very, very good. Marty, what was your favorite match of the evening?
Heart Foundation versus Strike Force from the Boston Garden.
Yeah. Yeah, that's mine too. I loved Hogan and Bigelow against the Mega Bucks, but the Strikeforce Heart Foundation had that, you know, extra, just great tag team wrestling, right? You know, Hogan, Bigelow, and the Mega Bucks was a great spectacle, but the Hearts against Strikeforce was just a great tag team match. Best face in peril.
Oh, Rick Martel by a country mile, as Vince McMahon would say.
True, another no-brainer. You could almost make it like the Ricky Martel, wee-wee Ricky Martel Best Face in Peril Memorial Award. Or, well, not memorial, because he's still alive. the wee-wee Ricky Martel Award for Best Face in Peril, I think we can call it, going forward. Best Hot Tag.
Best hot tag, Davy Boy Smith, just overall.
Right, because, yeah, we had two Bulldogs matches.
Oh, the Hogan. Yeah, I'd actually still put Davy Boy's over Hogan's.
Hogan's was really good. Tito's. Tito's was good as always. Yeah, we have some solid contenders.
I'm sticking with my guns. I'm going with Davy Boy.
I'm going to go with Hogan, because I think Hogan needs something for... For what he did in that match, and just for being awesome overall at this time. This was fun. I love just grabbing these matches and throwing them on and seeing what happens. Because we had a pretty solid card, so to speak, here.
We did. It was a good time.
Mm-hmm. So I think going forward, well, we're going to, of course, progress with 1988. We talked about WrestleMania 4 earlier, so we're going to have to look at the six-man tag, Bulldogs, Coco Beware against the Islanders and Bobby Heenan, and also a title match on that card, Strikeforce against Demolition.
Well, is Demolition feuding with Patera and Haynes?
That was their late 87 feud. Maybe it was still continuing.
Because what were they doing these months? Play them, right?
Good question. Yeah. But anyway, they wind up the number one contenders to the tag team titles at some
point. Let me tell you something. When you beat Cam Patera and Billy Jack,
there's nowhere else to go but up, baby.
Yeah. You've done something in this world.
So I think that's the only two tag matches from WrestleMania 4, unless I'm forgetting something obvious.
Well, WrestleMania 4 is the tournament, so.
Yeah, they have a big battle royal as well. It's the most, well, I think maybe WrestleMania 32 from this past year finally
flips it in terms of fucking
most gorgeous. Bloated card of all time.
What the fuck happened there?
I don't know, but WrestleMania 4 is super bloated show on its own. Because there's a tournament tag team title match, 6-man tag, intercontinental title match, 20-man battle royal, and a random Ultimate Warrior versus Hercules match that is not part of the tournament.
Oh shit! I thought the Ultimate. Oh yeah, who did Honky Tonk defend against? Bruce Beefcake?
Brutai, yeah.
Oh shit! I heard that there's like a Rick Rude Jake the Snake match that's like the worst thing ever.
It's like the Chinlock battle of all time.
It's the biggest, like, it's Chinlock City, baby.
It's the last word on Chinlocks, basically. 15-minute draw of Chinlock.
Those are two guys that when I think of two people, that them and Don Morocco, those three guys together are just like, when I think of people who just, if they don't want to fucking try, they will not try.
No trying in that match.
There's no trying.
Anyway, so besides that, though, of course, we'll dive into stuff from MSG, Boston.
The Rockers are coming, baby. The Rockers are coming.
Yeah, later in, well, when did,
like, I think July, I think?
Yeah, I was going to say July. So the summer of 88 is going to see the Rockers arrive.
We have Demolition versus Strikeforce rematches to watch.
Yes, we have that. We have the Brainbusters coming in around.
Shit. No, that's next year.
September. Yeah, they pop in before the Survivor Series.
No, I was worried about Demolition versus Powers of Pain, but I don't think.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll see.
Actually, no, that is coming up, isn't it?
They feud. When Demolition are heels and Powers of Pain are faces,
then
they flip and then they continue feuding after the double turn. There's a lot of possibilities.
Oh man, I was reading random reviews for myself trying to jog my memory of what 1988 was. But anyway, so Demolition defends against the Bulldogs in April, so we'll have to watch that. And so they cut this promo, and I remember this promo. Now, it's Smash saying that he's going to encrust Matilda in chrome on their Winnebago when they drive to the Grand Canyon. The amount of detail in that sentence.
That's a beautiful sentence.
Oh, you know what I said? After that too, as I said, the Wyatts need to listen to some Barry Darso to really get crazy down. So
poor Matilda kidnapped and then encrusted in chrome. That's just the animal abuse in WWF 1988 was, you know, deplorable. All right, folks. Yeah, so coming up, we got, you know, basically the rest of 1988. We'll look at various different matches from different arenas and different cards, and I'm pretty excited because, you know, there's a ton of stuff that I've never seen before, so I'm looking forward to diving into that. All right, Marty, anything to say before we go?
Woo!
Just too sweet!
Suck it.
Yeah. PWO, get your act together.
Yeah.
For life.
PWO, for life.
Yeah. All right. Later. You got planned.
that you can build them again. Look around.